Welcome to Conversations With. My name is Shaylee Hugendorn, and I live with bipolar 2 disorder. Sharing with others is healing, both individually and collectively. Sharing our stories will educate others, bring more understanding, shed more light, and smash more stigma. Our voices need to be heard. Our stories aren't over yet. This is Bipolar. Hey everyone, welcome back to This is Bipolar. This is part 2 of Bipolar and the Workplace with Brandon B. Russ on Instagram. He is at The Real B. Russ. Go and follow him. He is a rapper. He is an amazing content creator. He lives with bipolar 2 disorder and he is a fierce mental health advocate. He makes amazing content on Instagram and on TikTok that really just teaches people and inspires people and educates people about what it's like to live with bipolar disorder. And so if you haven't already listened, go back and listen to part 1. We just ended up talking so long because it was just a beautiful thing to be able to talk honestly about our struggles, our triumphs, our hopes and tips and all the things about being employed and living with bipolar disorder. There's also some fun things like our first job, and or maybe we've talked about some jobs we've been let go from or left hastily. So go back and listen to this first episode. This is part 2. And without further ado, we'll just get right into it.
I totally agree with that. I think to your point, it's kind of like a certain level of self-awareness, like, you know, when it comes to just taking a look at these things. Like, I didn't consider these things, you know, up until a certain point because I didn't know. Like, I was like, all right, I got the job. I just got to show up and do it. But I never took time to say, like, okay, I'm noticing that at this time of day, this is like where my energy level is like the lowest. Yeah. And this time of day is when I seem to kind of have like this second wind, because then, which just kind of goes into like another thing, but I was going to say, it's just like having a supportive employer to have that line of communication open to where, how you were saying, the people that have worked for you really appreciate it, because like now I know that I can come to you and share that, okay, this time might not be the best for me, but I promise you, like, I'm going to get it done, but it's just, it may have to be at this time. But to have someone that understands that, or is at least willing to give you, like, to trust you enough to say, yeah, I'll try it. We can try it that way. Makes it a lot to me, like, easier to be able to, like, come to terms with that yourself, but then also like communicate that information and like advocating for yourself. But when you don't feel like, in my experience, when I feel like when we don't feel like we have that safe space at work or a supervisor that understands, it's like, we could know all of this. We could know what we need, but because it's not a safe space or we feel like we might be punished for it or scolded or whatever the case may be, you know, that's kind of when I feel like it leads to like this dreading to go into work, resenting the job, resenting the supervisor, and then eventually either leaving on our own or either leaving because something happens or we reach such a point where they're like, you know, we gotta let you go.
One of the I asked a question. I'm actually thinking, and maybe you'll join me, I didn't ask you this ahead of time, but we have so much response from like our Instagram communities about this. And I'm thinking I'm going to have to make a part 2 for that, just to get into that. Also, I didn't ask anybody till like midday yesterday. We're recording today. So I'd love to give people some more time. So I definitely, and if you want to join me, do. Okay, I want to do a part 2 with all of that, because I feel like we could talk for another hour about that. Yeah, what I want to get into right now, which I think we've already kind of started, is you know, things that can work for us or have worked for us. And then also just, just wrapping up kind of with that. And then the next one, maybe we could share other people. I love it. I'll share. It'll be all about sharing other people's stories and taking their questions, but one of the questions that came to mind was from Sarah. Shout out to Sarah from Rough Edges. She asked, like, how do you know, or what can, how do you know if it's a safe space or a good environment to share? And at first I was like, I don't know. And then I thought about it and I was like, you know what? In interviews, I think in the past, and well, still now, but I think the expectation was just to, I remember them saying, if they ask you your weaknesses, always say you're a perfectionist because that makes you look good. Or do you know what I mean? You're desperate for them to hire you. But I think also think about it as they need you. So it is okay for you to ask questions. I would have never asked questions or any that didn't just pump them up, right? But ask, like, what do you have for services, do you have for this, do you make accommodations for certain things like this? And I think that if you want to be there for a long time, I think you can ask those things ahead of time, because like you said, otherwise you get yourself in situations that make us sicker, right? And I think making those lists that we're talking about what helps, what doesn't help, your work plan. I would completely suggest Julie Fast's book. She has a whole chapter on work history, and she has where you can fill it out, and it asks you these deep questions and your, you know, different things, how you can make a plan and an honest plan and an honest picture. So I totally recommend this. Go follow her. She's a bipolar researcher and she lives with it. But if you need it to have it written down, but what I wanted to add to that is try and do it not when you're at the height of hypomania and the height of depression. Maybe jot down a few things, but go back and check yourself when you're not, because your brain does lie to you during those times. It may say, this is really helpful when you're hypomanic, but really it just feels good when you're hypomanic, but is detriment. I would say that. And I would say, like, find someone close to you and ask them, like, hey, you know me, you know, kind of my cycles, you know, have you noticed anything that helps? Or, or your friends might notice, you know, when I talk to you like this, you're much more responsive. And I'm like, oh, so then I'm able to make a list with my husband about, you know, things not to say, kind of. And if you have those ideas and triggers, just, you have to, like, almost over prepare. It's like you need to have, like, a binder on yourself. Right.
And it feels very, like, over prepared until you need it. Then it's like, oh, like, this makes sense. But I just wanted to add on to what you were saying about kind of like knowing, like, our value in the relationship. And this is, like, true in any relationship, like friendships, dating, like, you know, it's like at the end of the day, we bring something to the table. But I feel like because of how a lot of us have been handled, quote unquote, when it comes to, like, you know, downplayed, gaslighted, like all of this stuff, sometimes we show up and not realize, like, I'm that dude. Like, I'm that girl. Like, y'all would be lucky to have someone like me. Yeah. And I'm not just saying that because I'm hyper, but I'm saying that because I know that I'm important and I bring something to the table. So, yeah, like, have those questions for the interviews.
Yeah,
I would also say, like, even beyond the interview, like, in getting the job and kind of, like, filling it out, like, really look at how other people are treated there. Like, how, especially in moments of, like, I don't want to say conflict necessarily, but more, like, when people aren't doing well, like, or aren't performing the way that the job expects you to, like, okay, like, sit back and watch how, because it's easy to treat someone well when they're doing what you want them to do. But, like, I feel like a true test of character, whether, like, personal or, like, the character of a business or corporation, is, like, how do you treat your employees when they're not doing what you want them to do? And sometimes, to me, like, that'll show a whole lot, because then it's like, okay, so you mean to tell me, I'm, you know, putting all of this together, like, I'm looking, like, okay, so-and-so, you treated them well last week when they met all the deliverables, when they did this, when they did that, but this week, which isn't even a long time afterwards, so you didn't forget about what they did well, but because it doesn't measure up to, like, what you think, how it should be done, or if even if they made a mistake, like, they don't get any grace. Now they get written up or they get scolded or disrespect, just straight up disrespected. And I think that's, like, a really you know, it's kind of like a general way, but just like without knowing like everyone's specific situations, like
Yeah.
I feel like you'd be surprised how much you can learn about a place you work if you just sit back and just like
Yeah.
look at what's actually like going on.
Yeah. And do they just reprimand and scold, or do they try and find ways to help you be successful, right? Like, yeah, for sure.
Because my thing is like I don't have a problem with criticism. I actually that I lie. I'm scared of criticism because
Yeah.
it taps into like the people pleasing, like scared
Yeah.
of rejection. But it kind of makes it a little bit easier when someone criticizes me, but then they tell me like, okay, but you did this well, or either like this is how you can do it better. But like just to just straight up like I've sat and watched or and just experienced myself where like I'm ready to step in for my coworker. Like, don't talk to them like that because you wouldn't talk to anyone else outside of this job like that. You feel brave enough to talk to us like this just because we work for
Yeah.
you? Like, nah, like we're not gonna do that. So
Yeah. For
yeah.
sure. For sure. I agree. I think, yeah, I think, asking for what you need, and then if they can't do that, then, for your mental health, you might need to step away, and you might need to, figure out ways to, explain gaps in your resume, and those, that's a really hard thing. A lot of people were bringing up that. Have you had that experience?
Oh my
What
gosh.
do you say?
So most recently I actually had that experience because I haven't really talked in detail about this, but I'm sure a lot of people that have followed by now like probably realize like that's what's going on. But I was about to say, so the job I got back in September, like they fired me like in January because just taking the time off to like I just you know those days where I just couldn't handle going in and eventually they were pretty much like all right so you either got to come back now or either like this is over. So I just interviewed for a part-time job at a like a pretty cool like company, just doing like some restaurant serving and things like that. But when I interviewed the I was like, this is gonna be the first question they ask because I only worked there from September until like December, January, I didn't list it on my resume. And so
Right.
my last job listed was from last year. And so he was like, what have you been up to? And I was like, you know, like I wanted to be like a little, you know, a little this,
Yeah,
little
yeah.
here and there. But I was like,
Traveling the world.
yeah, you know, finding some way to make it
Yeah.
sound good. But like my thing is really just I think what's made me comfortable and having like some real conversations behind that, depending on
Yeah.
the setting and depending on the job, is just like I don't feel like I or anybody should have to feel ashamed that like, yeah, I had this gap, but the reason I had it is because I had to take care of myself. And I care about myself enough to honor that, and you're not gonna make me feel guilty or feel less productive or whatever it is just because I didn't work from this time to this time. Because it really doesn't have anything to do with what I can do here. You know,
Yeah.
if this is a right fit, I might work here for 5 years, but that doesn't have to do with me not working from last year up until now because. You know, but I think some of that even comes down to, you know, getting some of the ownership off of us, but really on like employers, like knowing the right questions to ask because, you know, if you're literally just trying to figure out how I can serve your company, then yeah, that might put me in a tough spot to answer that question because I can tell based on the lack of care in this conversation that
Yeah.
I have to answer this a certain way because it's dealing with my productivity. But if I gather that you actually care about me more than just a worker, then I might be real with you about why I was off this last year because I had some health issues to tend
Yeah.
to. But I'm good now though, and I might have some to tend to later, but I love myself enough to honor that. And it's much easier said than done. But I'm trying to get to that point where I don't necessarily like guilt trip myself for these gaps because they weren't just for nothing. They were like, I needed that time.
Yeah. Tell me about what employers did you tell that you had bipolar disorder? And maybe could you tell me an instance or a story or an experience about, when you told them or how people are asking about that? I don't think I'm super helpful with that because I am a teacher on call and I go to like 20 different schools. I don't have, and because I'm a sub, so I work when I want. So I'm usually pretty good at what I do because I go when I'm doing well. Luckily, I absolutely recognize that that is very privileged. My husband has a full-time job. I'm able to do that. We have a renter that pays bills. So, I know a lot of people be like, well, we can't make our schedule whenever we want. I recognize that I've been able to set up my life like that, but I don't have to tell people because I'm not there long enough. Like I'm not, I don't have, I'm just starting to get deep relationships with some schools, but it doesn't come up in that way because it just hasn't had to. So I don't have that. And it's not because I'm afraid to, it just wouldn't make sense for me to tell a principal that I saw one day, like, hey, guess what? I'm bipolar. See ya. I'm going to go be with this class for the day. Like, do you know? Right.
Yeah. So I know what you mean. Yeah.
I'm always curious about others people's experience, but if I do get a full-time job or whatever, eventually I will have to, or people find out because of the podcast. I mean, it's on the interwebs.
Yeah.
But yeah. Tell me a story or tell me your experience with disclosing it and how that went and,
I got you. So I would say like, if I started working like full time in like 2010, 2011, I would say I didn't really have, the only time between that time up until maybe like 2016, so like about 5 to 6 years, the only time I would kind of be maybe a little bit more like raw, or like transparent about it would be like when I felt like I had to be, because I'm like, I have to tell them something because they're going to be like, yo, like you're like, you can't just continue to take all this time off and things like that. But now it's more, and again, it depends on the company too. So a lot of my work has been like in the mental health field. So like this last interview with the company, I got the job that I just got let go from. In that interview, because I know, like, or thought at least that they would be more understanding, because like y'all are working for an agency that helps people that struggle with these things. I can't remember exactly what they asked me during the interview, but like in an effort to show that, like, I'm probably one of the best candidates for this job because I live with this. Like, this isn't a check to me. Like, this is my life we're talking about here. So I just told him, I didn't tell him it was bipolar at the time, but I was just like, I've struggled with a lot of the things that the clients that we're serving, like, I've struggled personally with those. And the hope is always that they wouldn't, like, use the information against you. And I don't necessarily think they used it against me, but I don't feel like they really care with the way that they handled me when it all went down, because it's like, y'all wouldn't handle them like this. Y'all wouldn't kick them out the program if they, whatever. Like, it's people in the program that haven't paid rent for months and y'all keep them there. But because I took a week or two off to rest, y'all know exactly what I'm going through. It just, it feels very like just not good, so
yeah.
I think it's just like feeling it out, and I don't think it's really like, that's what it's hard for me to give like a direct answer, because it depends like so much, like your personal comfort, kind of like, stuff like that.
Yeah. And I know I don't have experience with this, so I'm going to ask the community, but I know, like, if you have like, disability, like I had a hard time, struggling with that. But essentially, if you look at the definition of disability, right? Then if you have that, you can ask for accommodations. But then again, it's like they'll see you have a disability, so might not hire you. So it's it's tricky. It's tricky. Yeah. And we don't have the answers for that. And
I want to say something real quick. So
yes, please.
Because this, I'm kind of like, as I was explaining, like in the thick of this. So like, this is how I feel about accommodations. I'm not trying to sound negative or pessimistic because everybody's situation, employer is different. But like one thing I've learned is every accommodation isn't really an accommodation. Like I feel like some companies say they give accommodations and I feel like it's really a way for them to feel good about or maybe not as bad about some of the ways that they treat some people with disabilities. Yeah. But it's like, this isn't really an accommodation. So like, I'll give you an example. So like, and maybe not to put it all on the job, I think it's more like a systems thing. But so,
yes.
So there was a job where I ended up taking off pretty much essentially like 3 months off of work, where it was like a whole season, like summertime, I was at home the whole summer, came back. But okay, like the accommodation is that, all right, with this health insurance, I have short-term disability benefits, like long-term disability. But okay, that's cool. And that's going to protect my job. But then now I go to my psychiatrist and tell him, hey, like, I'm not able to work. Like, can you help me fill out this? Do you know my psychiatrist charged me $300 to fill out my short-term disability paperwork, knowing that I don't have a job? Like, and I had to pay it, because if I didn't, then I would lose the job. Yeah, I could have just gone to somebody else, but the time it would have taken for them to then like get to know me enough to trust writing this paperwork. But looking back, and I'm appalled, because my thing is like, luckily I was able to figure it out eventually, but I'm thinking about for maybe someone who couldn't figure out like anything close to that. But yeah, so on the surface, it looks like I'm being accommodated, because yeah, like, yeah, he's got a job, they got insurance, he has disability benefits. But that link in the chain that I just explained really made, or you know, it could have broke down the whole chain, because now you're putting me in a position where this sounds good from the outside looking in, but when you really get to like the nitty-gritty of everything. And then the other thing real quick is, I talked to a case manager at an agency yesterday that may help me apply for like disability benefits, like SSIs, I know this is what it's called here, but like, but my struggle with that is that a couple of things. So number one, she asked me how old I was, and I was like, I'm 35. She told me that I'm gonna have a hard time getting disability benefits because the country looks at me like, yeah, I may have a disability, but because I'm young or younger, I'm supposed to be able to basically figure it out. You know what I mean? Then the second part that is very like confusing, but it really makes me angry, is that, so then I was told, yeah, so this case could take anywhere from like 9 months to a year to a year and a half. And I can't work while my case is pending, because if I were to go get a job, while this case is pending, they're going to look at that and be like, oh, he can work, so we don't need to help him. And then if I get denied, there's like a waiting period. I can't even reapply immediately. So like, yeah, on paper, yeah, it looked like you just get benefits. Like, just I had a friend ask me the other day, because I've been struggling over the last few days. I had a friend ask me, like, why don't you just get disability benefits? I'm like, dude, like, It doesn't pay a lot, number one. No. Like, we're talking like maybe 900 and something that I usually would see with my clients a month. That's not even enough to pay rent some places. But then now to tell me while I'm on this, like, I can't even get a part-time job. I can't.
Yeah.
Y'all are going to look at me like, oh, you're supposed to be able to do this or do that. Yeah. But it's like, no, I'm just trying to survive. Like, nobody can survive off of
no
$100 a month. Like,
I think you're right talking about systems, because it's like you either have to be, you know, completely desperate, or they make you, you know, worse. It's almost like it's the privileged get help, right? And it's gross. And I think Brandon would agree with me. That is why we're sharing. That is why we're trying to get the stigma. You know, I want it to be taken as seriously as maybe, and I don't know about how disability works with this, but I also do know there's more sympathy, et cetera. If I had cancer or something, if I had diabetes and I needed accommodations and I needed them now, I think I wouldn't have to wait a year and a half. And I think that we're, the way that it's set up, it makes people sicker. And then it was like, it would save the government money if they could just, it's so messed up. And it's really hard. And so, you know, if you're struggling with something like this, just know it's systems, it's other things. It's not a personal flaw. Yeah. I could talk about this all day, and we're definitely doing a second episode. I would love to end this with a word of encouragement to someone right now that's maybe not working, or maybe they are, or maybe just got diagnosed and scared, maybe just a word of encouragement. I mean, we're not going to be toxic positivity, like you can do hard, just push through, but just something we could say. I would love for you, if you wanted to go first, but yeah, just something that you could say to someone, because my greatest hope is that people feel seen and heard and loved and know that it's not your fault.
Yeah, I think like the biggest thing, or the first thing that comes to mind for me, is again, recognizing that, how can I say this? Like, whenever we take on this like ownership of, oh, like I'm lazy or I can't have a job, like we're taking on an identity. And a lot of times it's an identity that's based off of comparison to something that's broken. And so knowing that in a lot of countries or societies that are strictly just driven by like money and productivity, of course you're going to be lazy to them, because at the end of the day, is your behavior making us money, or is it not making us money? And so I think sometimes when we take on that like lazy identity or whatever it is, like we really lose sight of like our value is just being, like not what we can do, but just being. And I feel like the encouragement I would give is just, despite how you feel like you perform on a job, despite the praise you didn't get, you feel like you deserve, despite the embarrassment, the whatever the case may be, just first and foremost, outside of work or anything you can do, like you're important just as a person, and really owning that part of your identity. Because then when you're challenged with, I'm not measuring up to like this broken society, that everybody's trying to push on me, it's like, okay, like I might not be a good fit here, but still walk away with my dignity and my love for myself, because I know it's not me. It's just, this might not be the best fit for me, but that's okay, because that doesn't mean I'm like a flawed person, or that doesn't mean that I was even wrong. It just means this just didn't work in this relationship. But guess what? Like, there's usually other relationships out here that will, you know, maybe work with me a little bit more. So just not letting that push you to a point of questioning like your worth in the world and what you can produce, because we're worth more than what we produce. It's just like we're just because we're beings, we're here.
Yeah, like we can't wrap up our worth in our productivity, because it isn't a fair comparison, and it's a construct, right? Capitalism. Yeah. Ah. I think I would say too, like if you aren't working and you can't work, and if all you can do is breathe and get through your day and stay alive, you know, that's work. And that's hard, some of the hardest work. And I just want to recognize the hurdles that we have to go through. And they're very, very real. And, you know, it's unfortunate that we have to learn to be resilient. I know when people say, oh, but you're so resilient. I'm like, I don't have a choice. I wouldn't be alive. Like, yeah. It's not a choice. And just so I hope people know, it is not a personality flaw. And I 100% agree with Brandon, like loving ourselves. And I just think that is the most important. And please, please, please know that you're not alone. And if you can't work, you can't work. And that doesn't mean that you are lesser of a person. And
and take care of yourself, because I always tell people at the end of the day, and this might sound like however it sounds, but I'm like, look, at the end of the day, one or two things or whatever is going to happen. Like, I'm going to come in here and literally work myself to death, or work myself to a point where I'm hospitalized or whatever, and they're going to find somebody to just fill up that office with all those desks that we talked about with the highlighters. Yeah. Literally just going to put somebody else in there. So at the end of the day, you might as well take care of yourself, because when you don't, do you really expect that they're going to, like, you know, so just taking that time to honor yourself enough to be like, you know what, I'm going to take care of myself. And that's okay. Yeah. Like, that doesn't mean anything. Okay.
Yeah. And it's not just a poster, right? It is your mental health is actually like above all else important. And well, this has been such an amazing conversation. And I just want to ask everybody, message me or Brandon, or there's a post in my feed as well. And Brandon also has a post. Maybe he'll share it in his stories where he talks about work. And maybe you can send us, we'd love to hear your experiences, good and bad, any of your tips and tricks. And we'll record an episode where we just tell all your things, because I know that you all are so wise, and just, we're all in this together. And Brandon, thank you. I love that you're a regular on the podcast. It makes me so happy. And honestly, your friendship makes me feel less alone. And I am your number one hype girl in your Instagram. I will be there. That's right. Once I get on better on the TikToks, I'll be there too.
Yes, man. I can't express how much, not just this, but just our friendship period means, because, you know, as you probably know, you know, we go through a lot as like creators. Like, you may see one thing, but it's like, you never know like what we're really going through. And some of the conversations we've had in private is like, I feel very comfortable coming on here, because it's such a safe space, because I know like you really like get it and take the time to encourage, or likewise. I'm very appreciative for this platform and anytime that I'm here, because it's such a great, just a great conversation. And it feels very just comfortable. Like, you know, it feels like a safe place. And that means the world to me in a world where it's so much danger for us, or, you know, so just to be able to come and talk and laugh, talk about some real things, but at the end of the day, it's all for the, you know, the greater good. That means so much to me. So
same. Well, watch out for our next episode. Go and listen to the other episode with Brandon. Follow his work. It's just so good. It's so informative and so comforting. Go and do all the things and send in your questions and stuff, because we are going to dedicate an episode to what y'all have experienced, because that's so important. So thank you for being here, friend. And thank you to all of the listeners. This is Bipolar. Thanks again for tuning in. You can find video versions of This Is Bipolar on our YouTube channel. We also have all our previous and soon-to-be future episodes of the podcast on Apple, Podbean, Spotify, and Google Play. We spend most of our time on Instagram
at this.is.bipolar. There is a vibrant community there where we have conversations and post different ideas and different strategies, and we'd just love for you to join us there.
It is so helpful if you enjoy our work or think it would be helpful to someone if you could like and share and save and follow us in all or any of those spaces. If you're a listener for the podcast, if you could leave a review, we would be forever grateful. Again, thank you for being here with us. Let's get the word out. Let's share lived experiences so that we can change the ideas that people have about bipolar and help those of us that live with it feel less alone.
This is bipolar.